about it and confronted Donny on his own. I begged him not to do it, but he was so adamant about the whole thing and that it had to be stopped. Did it ever occur to either of you to come to me with this? They sat there, silent. Well? Kasich glanced at Abe and then turned back to me. The man was psychotic. He'd already killed Miguel. Do you think he would have stopped at killing Jeannie or Liam or any of us? You could have come to me. And then what? Abrani tried to save his daughter, but she was paralyzed with fear. Not only for herself, but for what Donny had and would continue to do to their child, so Abe took him. What would you have done? Pulling the Colt from my holster, I reached around and took the handcuffs from my belt. Stand up. He didn't move. I said, stand up. Finally finding his voice, he shook his head. No, I don't think I will. I loomed over the fire, feeling the heat. Don't make me use force, Abe. He rubbed his nose and smiled a sad grin. I heard about that force of yours from Jacques, and I don't think I want helping. Put the shotgun down, Abe. No, I don't think I do that either. He stood unsteadily and directed the shotgun away from me, knowing I would fire in an instant otherwise. I think about that old man of mine, the one that's supposed to shoot Lucien. He shook his head. Crazy times that was. I think them times is long forgotten, but now I see that crazy times is all around us, waiting for the opportunity to step up and shake hands all over again. There was a wavering sound that carried in the high wind, with a sorrow and loneliness that was profound. We all paused to listen, and Abarene barked a laugh. Es es algunen roaldia, otso duraldia da. I listened for the wolf again, but there was only silence. What does that mean, Abe? For the first time his eyes met mine, and there was none of the sing-song rhythm in his voice. A land of strangers is a land of wolves. I could see his hands tightening on the Remington. Don't do it, Abe. He stared at me, dark eyes glinting in the reflection of the fire, and I knew he'd made up his mind. It's like that, you know. You kill a man, and you kill yourself. I raised the 45, leveling it at his chest. God is good, but he's not crazy. Suddenly there was a whirring sound. We all froze. There stood Liam on the steps of the wagon with a blanket wrapped around his shoulders, his bare legs exposed, and Kasich's dog Gansu beside him. Abarane stood unmoving, licking his lips, trying to find his voice. Did Papi wake you up with that loud talk? The boy nodded. Well, you go on back in there, and stay warm. No, Liam, don't. The old man turned to look at me as I put away the cuffs and holstered the Colt. Why don't you come out here and join us? Walking around the campfire, I moved past Kasich and, wrapping him more securely in the blanket, lifted the boy into my arms and turned back toward the fire. Gansu joined her mistress as I approached Abarane with his grandchild tucked into my arms. The child smelled good, of warmth, sleep, and life, wiping away the smell of gunmetal and death with his small, fragile breaths. Put the gun down and take your grandson, Abarane. The lines in his face smoothed and softened as tremors of emotion overtook him. Take your grandson, Abe. A sob broke from his twisted mouth. The old man tossed the shotgun aside and reached out to take the boy, burying him against his chest with a retching cry that rivaled that of the wolf. Epilogue. We sat on the tailgate of my truck and stared at another dead sheep. I'm thinking Larry is pushing his luck. I didn't respond. She gave me the same look she'd been giving me all afternoon, trying to read my unsettled mood. I watched as Butler and Kaplan worked the freshly killed carcass. This one's only 24 hours old, so they'll be able to get a more definitive read on what killed it, right? Yep. She turned back to the grisly scene. So, spoke with Larry lately? I didn't say anything. You think he's still out here? I studied the tree line leading to the high country. In one form or another. She sipped the coffee from the chrome lid of my old Stanley thermos and looked out at the fresh blanketing from 2 days ago. Snow in May. Welcome to the Bighorn Mountains. The absence of all color. What? White. The absence of all color. It's like nature has wiped the board clean and left nothing. I sat there, looking at the snow, feeling like I was falling into it, and smiled a sad smile. Rapidly becoming my favorite thing. She stared at me. What the fuck are you talking about? Nothing. I'm talking about nothing. Absolutely nothing. I took a deep breath and slowly exhaled, watching a thick haze lift into the air and dematerialize. What day of the week is it?
It's Friday.
I stretched my side, trying to unkink the muscles in my ribcage without pulling my stitches. Seems like a weekend.
Uh-huh.
She handed me back the cup.
You sure you're all right?
I refilled the cap and took a slug. What time is it?
You having some kind of cognitive disassociation or something?
No. I lowered the cup. I'm just wondering what time it is. She glanced at her watch with all its buttons and dials.
It's 4:20.
The office will be closed by the time we get back down.
Yeah, and it's still going to be Friday.
Raising her voice, she called out at the two men.
Hey, when are you two possum patrolmen going to finish up here?
Butler, the brand inspector, turned to look at her. I'm sorry, are we interrupting your coffee break?
As a matter of fact, you are. Besides, there's a nice fire back at my house and a half bottle of Chianti that's calling my name, so let's get this wrapped up, shall we?
Paris Kaplan rose, distributing portions of the victim into Ziploc bags and removing his plastic gloves.
Can I come? Vic smirked at him. I said a half bottle, carp cop.
Not taking the remark seriously, the bearded game warden stepped around Butler and crossed toward us.
Can't blame a guy for trying.
He turned back as Butler stood and joined him. Well? The older man tipped his signature black hat back and rubbed a calloused hand over his face before blinking and making the pronouncement.
Cat.
Kaplan nodded in professional confirmation.
Cat. Hallelujah!
My undersheriff raised her face to the retreating sun and then turned back to them.
Wait! Once they get the taste for human flesh, is it hard to break them of the habit, too?
Ignoring her, I asked, You sure? They both looked at me, Butler frowning.
What, you wanted it to be your wolf?
No, not really, but I guess I wanted to know if he's still here. Butler shook his head as he glanced at me knowingly.
If he's not dead, he's moved on to greener pastures. Too much activity around these parts, I'd say.
Where would he go?
He shrugged. Back in the park. The basin or farther north into Montana would be my guess.
He looked at Kaplan, who nodded in agreement.
Anyway, you don't get another public wolf scare with this one.
Vic looked up at me.
No such thing as a mountain lion scare?
It was Kaplan's turn to shake his head.
Sometimes, but not much, which is kind of surprising in that they're much more capable killers, especially solitary ones. It's odd, too, because unlike wolves, they'll sometimes kill a dozen sheep in one attack, just because they're moving. I mean, they're cats.
Too much like us. They all turned to look at me. Wolves. They're too much like us, which is why they scare people. Too much like us in their use of hierarchy, teamwork, cooperation, territory, ritual, and loyalty. I kept my thermos and moved toward the driver's side of my truck, opened the door and greeted my own great beast in his part-time lair. Ruffling his ears in an attempt to get him over the grudge he'd been holding against me for about a month now, I jammed the thermos into the seat cushion in the back and turned to look at them. Except sometimes humans aren't very loyal at all.
So he forgot and tied up the mule?
Yep. I navigated the switchbacks slowly, enjoying the ride down the mountain. Donnie wasn't much of a cowboy, and given his state of mind, I guess he forgot.
She reached back, letting Dog lick her open palm. "But he was the guy who beat up Miguel at the bar?"
"Yep."
I got an inkling of that when Jeannie said she and her husband had taken line dancing lessons and that he'd bought an outfit and had.
"All this because Miguel found out about the abuse?"
"It would appear."
"So, Mickey Southern, pervert hunter, was right?"
"In a way."
"What way?"
"Donnie Lott was Mickey Southern."
"You've got to be kidding."
Sancho went back to the Denver PD, and because of the seriousness of the crime, they were able to get an injunction that forced the server folks to give up the info on the Southern site. I guess he'd been doing this for years as some kind of recompense for his actions. There are no formal charges, but Jeannie admitted that there had been instances in the past that had been covered up.
She protected the son of a bitch?
It's not unusual.
From the abuser of your own child, never mind yourself?
Funny where those lines of loyalty delineate themselves, huh? She gave it some thought.
So, Miguel finds out Donnie is beating his wife and molesting his own kid, and threatens to tell Abarane, so Donnie gets the shepherd drunk and hangs him.
There were also the arboglyphs that the shepherds were using to communicate between themselves, including the one with the man and boy, the one with the evil eye warning.
What about the whole Colombian connection?
A diversion. We hit the straits past the runaway truck cable system, and I gave the 3/4 ton a bit more steam. By that time, Donnie was on his last rope, so to speak. He'd accidentally run into me at the gas station and got spooked. He must have felt like the world was closing in on him, which it was.
So, being an IT guy, he figured a way to crack into the Colorado Department of Labor and Employment files and insert the incorrect fingerprints?
He did. But the photos didn't match.
How about the ICE guy? Did he show?
Yep.
And?
He got a nice tour of the museums in Absaroka and Sheridan counties before having a beer at the Mint Bar and getting back on a plane to D.C.
At least he knows where Wyoming is now.
She shook her head.
What about the choo-choo woman?
Kasich, Cree for sky blue, like her eyes, and like the eyes of her grandfather, Jake's. She'd been in touch with Abarane after following up on Miguel. I think she knew about what was going on and used Hernandez as a point of contact. Then she and Abe worked together to get Donnie.
Teamwork.
Once the investigation started, they saw me as a real threat, and her main job was to keep an eye out and make sure I didn't get too close.
Territory.
Blood being thicker than water.
Loyalty.
She shook her head.
So all the wolves go to jail?
Inchoate crimes.
Excuse me?
A legal term, relatively specific to the state of Wyoming. Inchoate crimes are attempted crimes committed by accessories or by conspirators. Both Abarane and Kasich were charged with attempted involuntary manslaughter and arranged a plea hearing and sentencing whereby they can plead nolo contendere. They were promised that they would be placed on probation, including but not limited to whether or not they go to jail.
Burns Selby is okay with that?
The judge likes to see justice done.
You talked to him.
I did.
You also talked to the prosecutor and explained that Donnie was an internet predator, a spousal abuser, a pedophile and a child molester, of his own child, no less, and the murderer of Miguel Hernandez.
I did, and also pointed out Donnie's decision to not extricate himself from the noose, which would warrant a more lenient treatment of both Abarane and Kasich.
You think he dropped his spare set of keys in an attempt to get you to let go of him?
When I didn't respond, she shook her head.
Why not? I mean, you beat your wife, molest your own son, and there isn't going to be much solace from anybody.
No, there's not.
So, time served, and Honest Abe is back at his ranch, cutting hay to feed to the sheep the wolves are going to eat.
Rolling into town, I slowed and made the turn, pulling in and parking beside the jail.
More or less. And Kasich teach you?
I don't know, and tell the truth, I don't care.
Inchoate crimes. It does have a ring to it.
Once again, she stared at me.
Come over and help me drink wine?
I thought there's only a half bottle.
I lied.
She unbuckled her seatbelt and knelt on her seat, placing her elbows onto the center console and
breathing on the side of my face. "Come on, I'll make spaghetti, and we'll have sex."
I shook my head. "I don't think I can do this anymore."
"Sex or spaghetti?"
I smiled. "Maybe I've finally had enough of what people can do to each other.
I got there a long time ago."
I turned to look at her, those eyes very close.
"So why go on?"
"Because we're doing good, Walt. We're the only thing that holds the wolves at bay."
"That's unfair to wolves."
"Yes, it is. Here's where the hierarchy comes into play. We're the alphas, the ones that fight for decency and the common good."
"Think we're winning?"
"That's not important. The important part is the fighting." "I can't believe I'm giving this pep talk to you. I don't know much, but I know you've got to stand for something in this life. You have to fight for something. Some people go their whole lives without standing up or against something that's wrong."
"I don't know about you."
"Actually, I do. We don't want to be those people, so that means we play by the rules, fight the fights, and take the shots."
It was silent there in the truck. The only noise was dogs breathing.
"I think I'll just go in and get a few things done and then head home. Sit in my chair and look out the window."
"Well, maybe that's the fight for today."
She knelt there with her eyes on me for quite some time and then turned, sat, and opened her door. She slid out and stood with her hand resting on the handle.
"Whatever you decide to do, I better be part of the equation."
I nodded.
"Yep."
She quietly closed the door, and I watched as she climbed into her unit, fired it up, and swung it around beside me. She cranked down her window. I stared at her with a questioning look.
"Just so you know, I lost the office pool."
Rolling up her window, she jetted out of the parking lot at just under light speed, pausing only a moment to give me the finger. I don't know how long I sat there, but it was dark, and the next thing I was aware of was Dog sniffing my ear and placing his head on my shoulder.
"You need to get out, buddy."
I could feel his weight shifting the truck as he moved to the suicide door behind me. I unbuckled my seatbelt, opened my door, and stepped out to open his. I watched him as he leapt to the ground and trotted to the edge of the parking lot between us and the courthouse to relieve himself with a one-leg salute. Standing there waiting, I studied the traffic lights and then turned and gazed at the red stone front of the old library with its two columns and tall windows, one of 1,679 such buildings philanthropist Andrew Carnegie donated to communities across the nation from 1886 to 1919. I felt as old as the building. I glanced up at the dark clouds and scattered moonlight that was highlighting the Bighorn Mountains. Patting my leg, I made for the door and was surprised to find it ajar. I held it for Dog, who bounded ahead as I slowly followed him up the stairs. Sessa Vittoria was sitting on Ruby's stool, leafing through a copy of Wyoming Wildlife magazine, tossing it onto the counter as I approached.
"Welcome home."
"Thanks. What are you doing here so late?"
"Waiting for the results. Neither wolf nor dog?"
"Cat."
"A mountain lion. Do you have to worry about that, too?"
"Probably not."
"Good. I don't think I've got the stamina for another scare."
He stood, stretched, and yawned.
"Ruby left a note for you in your office."
I stared at him. "A note?"
"Yeah, boss."
With a deep sense of dread, I approached my office and looked inside at the large envelope lying on my otherwise naked desktop.
"Where's the computer?"
"She had me put it downstairs on the communal desk."
He joined me at the door and peered over my shoulder.
"I have no idea what it says."
Entering my office, I sat in my chair and studied the intimidating cursive handwriting, spelling out my full name.
"I thought I was doing pretty well."
"The computer?"
He crossed his arms and leaned on the door jamb.
"What, you want it back?"
"No."
He pulled something from his uniform shirt pocket. Almost forgot. I was cleaning out the prisoner personal possessions locker and found the rucksack Kasich Chichu left behind, and these fell out. He tossed the stack of cardboard coupons held together with a rubber band onto my desk. At least 50 Mallow Cup play money cards. I gazed at them as if they might bite. I guess you figured they would spook you or something.
Maybe.
Well, at least one mystery solved.
He turned to go.
Still staring at the cards, I called out, "Hey, Sancho!"
He reappeared. "Yeah, boss?
Are you still having those dreams?"
The smallest traces of a smile played out on his lips.
"What dreams?"
I smiled back at him, and he saluted before disappearing.
"See you tomorrow, boss."
After a moment, I heard the heavy front door shut. My eyes were turned to the manila envelope and the cursive Walter. Picking up the oversized stiletto switchblade I'd carried back from my most recent adventures in Mexico, I slid it across the flap and opened the envelope. There was a photograph, a large, color 8x10 with, of all things, a post-it attached. Carefully sliding it out, I was confronted with the photo of Katie and Lola that I'd used as the screensaver for my now-departed computer. Smiling, I read the post-it. "Walter, sometimes it's best for us old dogs to not learn any more new tricks. Love, Ruby. P.S. Get your own frame." Standing, I patted my leg, and Dog followed as I walked through the office, turning out the lights, finally stopping at Ruby's desk. I wasn't aware of it until I felt the tug at my coat and watched as my hand turned and opened the Absaroka County Sheriff's badge lying there in my palm after I'd evidently unpinned it from my jacket. I read the words and then recommitted the image to my mind. The open book for justice, the mountains for steadfastness, and the star for truth, but all significant of something so much more. And this is how things end. Not so much with a bang, but with a whimper. I gently placed the gleaming hardware on the smooth, oak-grained surface of Ruby's desk. Turning, I started to take a step, but then stopped and stood there looking at the floor, my hand still resting on the surface of the desk.
"You pin that star on, and you think it's something you can just take off. But it isn't that way. It attaches itself to you. Unlike the glimmering pinpricks in the freezing winter sky, this star warms you and becomes a welcome weight that doesn't let go even if you wanted to. If its closest kin, over 93 million miles away, were to simply switch off, the average temperature on Earth would plummet to 0 degrees. In a year, it would be 100 below zero. In a million years, 400 degrees below. Better to not risk it." I picked up the star and pinned it back on, immediately feeling warmer. Dog followed me down the steps, where I flipped the last switch off, stepped outside and locked the door behind me. On the drive out of town, under the blinking yellow lights, I mused on the Mallow Cup cards and all the different places that I'd found them. But I couldn't work out how she could have placed the one under the travelogue where the Wolf 777M had been perched. Maybe she hadn't planted all of them after all. Noticing that the gas gauge was nearing empty, I drove under the interstate highway and took a left to the empty opposing lane to pull into the vacant lot of the closed Maverick station. It was getting cold again, so I zipped up my horsehide jacket and flipped up the collar, tugged on my hat, and pulled on my gloves. Standing there, filling the tank, I realized this was the exact spot where I'd confronted Donnie Lott, and I gazed at the motel across the street and then to the I-25 northbound off-ramp. Maybe I'd head south for a few days to entertain my granddaughter and annoy my daughter, the greatest legal mind of our time. Maybe I'd grab Vic and head down to Hatch, New Mexico, where it was bound to be warmer. Or maybe I'd just break into the store and steal a six-pack of Rainier beer and go home. Instead, I held a notion in my head for a moment. The image of a bright red Jeep Wrangler coming off the highway, rolling to a California stop at the sign and then driving toward me, pulling up at the other side of the pump. A window rolling down and me stooping to peer into the back seat where a bundled toddler, my granddaughter, sleeps. A toothsome redhead with startling gray eyes is at the wheel and glances up at me. "Hi, Daddy." But that's not what was there. My eyes refocused on the empty stained surface of a concrete pad on the other side of the pump island, a skiff of snow cast across the hard surface, looking for something, anything, to attach itself to. I could see Dog watching me from inside the truck, and then, on the center console, the envelope with the photograph of Katie and Lola. Maybe Henry was right. Maybe I was awaiting a vision that I wasn't ready for just yet. I wondered what you had to do to be worthy of such things and thought about a world where I would no longer have a place. A world where people always did the right thing. Studying the envelope, I figured maybe a photograph of a vision was enough for now. I looked back at the mountains and listened to the sound of the ever-present wind and the swaying of the trees as they mourned its passing. But more important, I listened with the cry of 7:77 a.m., if you will. Or Larry, if you won't. All I could hear was the whir of technology as the gas filled the tank. And I sighed, wanting to hear that howl so badly. The End. This is George Guidel. We hope you've enjoyed this production of Land of Wolves by Craig Johnson. Recorded books are available wherever audiobooks are sold, including Audible.com, Audiobooks.com, Google Play, Apple iTunes, and in public libraries through RB Digital. Thank you for being a Recorded Books reader.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.